FM.
Main menu.
Welcome to ACB Radio Mainstream's regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. This is Main Menu. Coming up on Main Menu this week...
My objective is to create this entity that allows the consumers to find the manufacturers, but also allows the manufacturers to become easily in contact with the end user, as well as the super service providers in between.
We learn about OcuSource, a new resource aiming to bring consumers, technologists, health professionals, and agencies together.
It's a virtual conference which allows us to create a very easy to navigate system or conference hall, if you will. You're going to find essentially all of the components of a physical expo or trade show or conference.
And we also hear about the OcuSource Expo taking place next month.
In the future, I'm sure that others will contribute segments for Main Menu demonstrating how to use VoiceOver with Mail, with Safari, the OS X web browser. And in the future, I also will demonstrate how to do an installation of the OS.
Let's hope so. And Jerry Hallerton is back with part two of his very popular demonstration of the all-new VoiceOver from Apple. That's all to come this week on Main Menu.
I'm Dave Williams, you're listening to ACB Radio's Main Menu, a regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. Joining us on the programme this week, a familiar voice known to many of you, that of George Byes from Talking Communities, and we'll hear from George shortly. But also, we have another gentleman, Lou, from OcuSource.com. Welcome to Main Menu, Lou. Okay, OcuSource, many of our Main Menu listeners probably won't know what that is. So, Lou, do you want to just give us a little bit of background?
I left as an executive with one of the manufacturing companies that made blindness braille devices and magnification devices back in 2003. My objective in leaving was to create a sort of an all-inclusive utility that can be used by all segments of the blindness industry. What I mean by that is that it's something that would be invaluable to the consumer, but also would be a critical tool for the agencies, the organizations, the manufacturers, and everyone involved with the industry, so that in one common place you can find all the different resources that are available, and then also some additional utilities that are available that help each of those areas. Upon leaving that company, I started this entity. We grabbed a bunch of programmers up in the San Francisco Bay Area and built a phenomenal database-driven utility here. We've got an online auction for used and occasionally new products. We've got a bid or procurement management tool, which is available for corporate purchasers and government and agency purchasers. Search tools so you can find vendors, find products, find agencies, find organizations, and all of this in a very easy and well-navigable structure and accessible.
Okay, and we are talking about more than just another sort of link farm, really. We are talking about a site that is rich in content, provides, as you say, use the word resources, and that's certainly what I found when I visited the site. Primarily, who are you aiming this at? Is this just at the sort of the blindness community in general, or are you aiming this at the industry, or what is it you're trying to do with this? I think I know the answer, but I suspect you'll be able to articulate it better than I will.
It comes from two perspectives. I personally feel, I'm an eye care practitioner, an optometrist and a low vision specialist by training, and as a practitioner, it was oftentimes hard to find any one place to direct a person to find resources where they were. I'd often get phone calls from around the country, and I really would have to struggle pretty hard to find the resources that they needed in another part of the country, and if they were moving to another country, it was even harder as well. So it's a place for the consumer to find find what they need on a national or a local level. So our databases of all of these resources of agencies, organizations, products, everything is all available in this one place, but not just a list of things. It's actually a searchable database all the way down to features of products, if you will. But from a manufacturer's standpoint, it's a different presentation, and that is that, you know, we have a wonderful critical industry that we're involved with, but it's challenged, and it's challenged financially, as well as other ways. But from a financial standpoint, let's take into account a manufacturer. One company may have a worldwide presence, and it has fantastic products, but the cost of promoting that one company's line of products worldwide is phenomenal. But bring it down even to promoting it throughout the United States, it's very tough to get the information from you, the manufacturer, out to the end user, and not to mention the counselor, the nonprofit agency involved that's in between, the rehabilitation company that's in between, or entity that's in between the consumer and the manufacturer. So my objective is to create this entity that allows the consumers to find the manufacturers, but also allows the manufacturers to become easily in contact with the end user, as well as the super service providers in between. A marketing event across the United States can cost millions of dollars, and we no one manufacturer, even the biggest manufacturer in our industry, can afford to do that kind of a marketing initiative.
Absolutely. So to some extent, you're almost becoming almost like the oracle to some extent, that you collected all this information together, organized it in such a way as to try and be useful to end users, service providers, and the industry. How did you? I mean, that's a huge undertaking. Where did you start, and how did you determine what information was going to be relevant and useful?
I'm really embarrassed to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. The way this started was I was actually teaching a continuing education course to a bunch of doctors, and it struck me that there was a need for self-testing for patients at home to monitor progressive vision loss, diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration. And that thought sparked, wow, it'd be really cool to create a simple little website that allows a person to log in, check the right eye's vision, check the left eye's vision, and create sort of a log, a graphical file tracking the vision. So I wrote out all that spec and thought through it as I was listening to the other speakers. And I went home and I thought, wow, that'd be really cool for this company that I was working with. I worked with Pulse Data, was the manufacturer I was with. And I thought it would be really great to create this cool thing, and a lot of low vision seniors would use it, and maybe it would generate new business for the company, and it would help people find their way around to different things. I thought, well, if they start using it, then they need to be able to find products. So I tried to figure out how to connect the product information to the vision tracking thing. And then I realized, wow, this would be really valuable to the agencies. So we needed a database of agencies, database of doctors, database of organizations, so that everybody could sort of find each other. And it started becoming a portal without thinking of going into it to create a portal. The embarrassing part of this was what I started in creating, I still haven't created yet. We will be launching the vision test as the last component of the OcuSource portal here in the next couple of weeks. It's just about to be finished up, not because it was complex, but because we realized that we needed to create all of the other pieces first. We needed to have the database of all the products and all their features. We needed to have the lists of all the service providers. We needed to build the auction system, which is a customized system to make it as accessible as possible. And all those things took us the first year. Now, once those were built, we then had to go and approach the manufacturers, because they didn't know I was doing this. So I then went to a core group of manufacturers and said, here's what I'm doing. I need you all to come along, because if you're there, all the other manufacturers and all the other service providers will come along as time goes on. So it was a lot of chicken before the egg happenings, that it just took time for it to grow to become an actual physical presence that you see today. But I'm pleased to say we're experiencing more than 1,000 unique visitors per day, and it is being used exactly the way I hoped it would be used. Our target of responding to the needs of the agencies and organizations is working, because we've got the bid management system. The consumers are looking for product information and used products. That's the auctions. And then we've also got professional resources. So that's just about to come online so that doctors can list their practices and list their services. Consumers can then find the doctors. So it's really a great project. It's a work in progress, but it's a wonderful one to watch it come to fruition.
What's the model, really? Presumably you're running this as a business ultimately. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're not a not-profit. This is a for-profit entity. Our business model is one that, to be honest and frank, we knew that we couldn't charge any of the people who would make money from us doing this. In other words, I couldn't create this and then have it created and then go over to all the manufacturers and say, I need you to pay a monthly fee to be on the site. So I'm personally funding the development fees and the development costs and marketing costs up to this point, and we'll continue to do so. We don't think we'll be reaching a point of activity to where it really is of really great grand value to the vendors for another 6 months or so maybe. The objective is that as everyone else uses it, they'll use it for the auctions. We make a little bit of revenue from auction fees. If someone purchases off the site, OcuSource doesn't sell it. It actually creates a sales order for the manufacturer. The manufacturer and the consumer actually have the transaction, not OcuSource. We're just the intermediary. So we charge a small fee for that transaction to occur. We have marketing services so that if a new manufacturer comes to the industry, someone creates a new software and wants to communicate it through all of North America, we have an email database that we can help them put together a dealer presence in the North American marketplace or in Europe as we evolve. So at each step of the way are small service fees. Secondly, from a marketing standpoint, we want to put together events, which we'll talk about in a few moments, like the Expo. And the Expo is, or we did a Reader's Digest campaign several months back. The senior market, the low vision market, is very challenged in that there are millions of people with vision loss, with macular degeneration, diabetic retinopathy, but they oftentimes don't know what the resources are available and they're not motivated to do certain things to help themselves. But if we can create a fruitful, valuable venue like we're doing in the Expo, family members, the children or the spouses of the people with a vision loss will find their way to the OcuSource Expo or whatever other events that we put together. And those are going to be generating revenues for OcuSource for putting it together, because obviously we charge for an exhibitor to be there and for sponsorship fees and a few other things. So in the big picture, we're hoping that someday some large companies, such as a pharmaceutical company or somebody who really, really feels that what we've done is a wonderful thing, will also give us some support in not so much donation, but marketing support in the form of a sponsorship.
I'm Dave Williams. You're listening to ACB Radio's Main Menu, a regular look at technology from a blindness and low vision perspective. We're in conversation with Lou from OcuSource, and the other gentleman in the room this evening is George Byes of Talking Communities, someone who is fairly familiar to many of you, I'm sure. Hi, George. Hope you're well. Tell us about your interest in OcuSource, and where do you come at this from?
Well, Lou... I believe Lou approached me after doing some due diligence on web conferencing solutions and seeing that our technology was quite speech friendly and accessible. And at that time, I was just getting into doing online trade shows and starting that operation up, and Lou decided that as we got talking, said that this would be something that he would be interested in taking a look at. At that time, I think CSUN was going on, and he had actually walked around CSUN with his computer and hooking into the wireless network, and he put out a we did 2 days of marketing, and we not really extensive marketing, but just putting out to our email list to see what type of internet audience we could generate. And out of that 2 days, we had about 500 people that actually showed up in the room as Lou interviewed the vendors. And then I went over to OcuSource to more and more to check out what it was all about, and being someone that's always been fascinated in technology and resources, I took a look at how he put the components of OcuSource together, and it was just absolutely incredible. I mean, there's an eBay in there that's accessible for blind people just and visually impaired people just for just like eBay. You can put in your bids, you can post something up there for bids. It's just all form-based driven, and you can track it, you can continue to put them in. I thought, man, this is pretty neat, and people were putting stuff up there. This is great. And then I looked at the agency side of things, and a lot of my customers that are doing training are people who are agencies and schools in the blindness and low vision arena, and I know a lot of their difficulties. And one thing about the bid system is if they opt in to that, then they can look for products for their people, that their clients, the people that they're serving, and do side-by-side comparisons. The search tool is just incredible on the products, and then they can initiate their bids, and it automatically goes out to the manufacturers and dealers, and the bids come in, and it's all paperless. And as someone who's went through that process, what I could see is, well, this is something that's going to benefit me or benefit those folks out there that are waiting for stuff to get done, because it takes time to move the paperwork from one place to another. And then from the doctor's perspective, with somebody that has a son that has macular degeneration, the resources of finding an expert or a doctor or information for my son for low vision products and for eye care was just, it's just all there. The more we talked and the more we used this technology that we're talking in right now, the more we could see where this could really be an incredible boon for OcuSource, for talking communities, for the consumers, and everybody in the industry, by possibly putting together an expo. So we formed an alliance called Let's Go Expo, which is going to be doing online trade shows and expos for not only the low vision industry, but a lot of other industries too.
Let's talk about this then. Attending a conference or an expo is an expensive business, not just for the industry, but also for consumers. And quite often, a lot of the things that are available at the various conferences and expos across the US and indeed around the world are really of huge interest to consumers. But quite often, we can't get access to that material or that information because of the prohibitive cost of attending a conference or an expo. So let's talk a little bit about the plans that you guys have. Lou, what's happening? It's next month, isn't it?
Yes, the expo starts on Wednesday evening, June 8th, which we're presenting our grand opening ceremonies. So you're going to find essentially all of the components of a physical expo or trade show or conference, but it's all going to be accessible to the visitor, whether the visitor is a consumer, a family member searching for a consumer, or a rehab agency employee, an organization's employee, a doctor who's looking to expand their knowledge base in the vision impairment arena. So it's a virtual conference which allows us to create a very easy to navigate system or conference hall, if you will. So if you can kind of imagine opening up the expo, which is at OcuSource.com/expo/expo.cfm, but OcuSource.com, you will find a link directly into the expo. But as you enter the main conference area, you can first find your way through the help set of rooms. So there's a registration room and a drawing enrollment room and a help area. And then there's the presentation halls. So you can go through and select the topic of presentation that interests you most. So there's feature presentations for the whole couple of days of the event. There's new product presentations, macular degeneration specific presentations, low vision blindness, and so on. There's also education oriented, and then there's doctor oriented presentation rooms. Now, after you look through the presentation rooms, those presentations go on earlier in the day on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And then the second half of the day, the exhibit center or the exhibit halls open up. So the presentations will end, and then the exhibit center opens up so that the consumer can then enter into rooms of specific exhibits, meaning there's a low vision exhibit hall, a blindness exhibit hall, new products, government agencies, organizations, daily living aids, and then some open conference rooms for discussions that are available at all times as well. So it is very easy to find the exact area of interest, go into that room, see what the presentation schedule is, listen to them. We're using George's Talking Communities tool called TC Conference, which is from all the work that I did trying to find who the right company to work with was, it's the ideal, most accessible product compared to the competition. So it's very accessible. The visitor, all they have to have is, as we're working with right now, the headset, the microphone, and a sound card-enabled computer, and they can attend any of the components that I've just described.
George, do you want to tell us a little bit about the TC conference software? This is the next generation of iVocalize, I guess, if people are looking for something to compare it with. Do you want to tell us about some of the new features that people will find in TC Conference?
Probably the biggest difference in TC Conference is the cross-platform client, which people with Linux or Mac can now talk to people with Windows machines. That's probably the biggest thing that you can see from a user's perspective. It does allow to record now in MP3 format as well as WMA and with the HTM file. The thing about the MP3 file is that it won't generate the web page is moving. It'll just be the audio part. And you can crank up the audio as high as the bandwidth will stand, so you could get some extremely good-sounding recordings on it. We use it now. We're using it over at Sweet Southern Sounds, and they do a lot of karaoke and a lot of live singing, and actually have some entertainers, professional entertainers, that get on and pick up the guitar and get and sing. And we did one deal with a band called Hijack, and they did something in their home studio actually, and it was done live, and it sounded really, really good. It was pretty amazing. Also, it handles the scalability. It handles the higher crowds much better. And we're looking at some point changes where hopefully people will be able to even call into a web conferencing room while they're on the road, or if they don't have a computer, that they'll be able to call in for the web conference.
That ability to telephone in, that's not quite there yet, but that's a little way down the road.
Correct. We are doing some, we can patch people in. I think you guys are doing an ACB actually with a phone patch into a voice chat room. And as far as the first generation of that should be available or is supposed to be available in about 4 months.
Okay. So, Lou, people attending the expo next month, starting on the 8th of June, then where are people likely to encounter the new TC conference software? This is something, presumably, that people will be prompted to download.
You would find your way to the expo either if you've obtained the link directly to the expo or from the OcuSource website. You'll enter into the main landing page, and that main landing page just gives general information about the schedule and provide some general overviews of both in video format and text. So once you've viewed the main entry page, you can then go into the main entrance hall of the site, where you can then choose the room that you want to go into. And upon going into that room, you can view what's in the contents, and you're prompted either by at one of the links within there to either participate in the presentation that's about to begin, or go into the room and request for the exhibitor or the presenter to join you. We've created a mechanism where if you enter the room and no one's there, there might be someone available at the other end, and they'll pop in within a few minutes. But the first and most logical place that you'd find your way into the room is by going to the presentations. So as you would look at the presentation schedule, you'd say, yes, I'm interested in watching this presentation about blindness technology. You would enter that room, and you would put in your first name into the login area, select login, and you would then be logged into the TC conference area and participate in the presentation.
Do we have a sort of a confirmed list of speakers at this stage, or are you still putting that together?
Yeah, that's a work in progress at all times. We've got presenters from, I think right now we're at 14 manufacturers have registered. We have at least 10 more that are just waiting for some internal approval before they send over. I shouldn't say manufacturers, that includes some agencies and organizations. But in addition to that, there's probably another 40 or 50 who have just found out about it for one reason or another in the last few days. So the list itself for presentations is growing every day. I just, while we're here on the computer, I've received 7 applications for presentations here just in the last few minutes. So I don't know what the end number will be, but I can most certainly say each of the topics that are listed on the presentation list will be acknowledged by at least 2 to 4 presentations without question.
I'm not aware of an online sort of expo concerned with, you know, the whole blindness, low vision field taking place previously. So it's very exciting. And so you, I guess if this is a success, which I'm sure it will be, you'd be looking to repeat this in the future or putting more specialist conferences together?
We know that the market, meaning the consumers, agencies, organizations, all wants this. We're absolutely convinced, especially after the traffic that we saw come from the CSUN presentations that I had done. But it's a logical next step for our industry, if you think about it. The budgets are being pinched. There's very, very limited revenue expenditures available for the not-for-profits and for the government agencies. So those staffers, those people need to be trained. They need to attend conferences. They need to attend seminars. And distance learning and online educational events are obviously the thing, not so much the thing of the future, they're the thing of the present. Many people are attaining their degrees, and many people are going to search out information about products and services through the web, of course. So an interactive situation where you can jump on and listen to specific presentations, get involved with conversations online live, go on to the site for the next 2 weeks, for 14 days after the event is over, through archiving, be able to listen to any of those presentations. We know that this market is going to gravitate towards what we've created. Our next objective is to try to bring this service all the way down to a more local level and set up several regional events, so the Northeast, Southeast, and so on of the United States. And then we want to have some fun with it. It's a wonderful venue. It's a wonderful tool. And we want to have some fun, like around-the-world educational conferences for eye care professionals or around-the-world training events for blindness and vision-impaired training. So we want to have a lot of fun with this at the same time.
I'd like to throw something in here, Dave, when you were talking about where someone would encounter the TC conferencing software also. And things are going on right now at OcuSource. And we've kind of set up a mission control center area. And so folks are coming there that are going to be presenters, and that's kind of a central locating place. People are coming in to volunteer to see what they can do to help out and ask what it's all about. Consumers are coming because we're putting a lot of marketing is going everywhere. And so we urge everybody to get over there. There'll be some open rooms that people will be spreading out to too. And so people can go over there now and they'll start seeing activity as this thing builds up. So they'll be able to actually watch something that's historical taking place.
One of the objectives of this expo, of course, is to make much of the information, which is often out of the reach of consumers, more accessible and more available. Typically, going to a conference, as I mentioned earlier, can be an expensive business. I've attended a few over the last year, and my credit card's taken a hammering. For the end user, for the consumer, is there any cost involved at all, Lou, other than obviously having an internet connection and a computer with a sound card and a microphone?
No, this is entirely free. There are no fees at all for this event, and we have no intention to ever going down that path. The purpose of this is to help those who are unable to attend these events. You know, we were doing some simple kind of addition, really. If you look at the top events in the country, U.S. anyway, CSUN, ATIA, closing map, the total number of blind or visually impaired people who attend is, I'm saying it's less than 10,000. And we all know there's more than 10 million visually impaired people in the United States. So I'm sure that the interest and the desire and the need is there. And I think as the next couple of weeks comes to pass, we'll see that quite a few people have adopted it. But no, we have no intention of charging the fee. The cost of operations and the staff, we have 24-hour support team here actually at George's End, helping people who are either exhibitors or presenters or even consumers who are there to attend the events to make sure that they're comfortable working with all of the utilities. So that's all covered by the by the exhibitors. And presenters are fortunately all attending on their own also. We're not paying the presenters at this point. We hope that someday as we evolve and grow into maybe even a formal e-learning community, e-learning event, if we can find our way to procure the funding to pay the presenters, we will do that in the future, but not this time around.
If someone's listening to this program and they are a consumer, they can just rock up at the website and they don't have to pay a dime, and they can access all this content with a view to making informed decisions about their sort of assistive technology needs, and perhaps learning more about their healthcare and so on. So as a presenter, if somebody's listening to this thinking, well, actually, I have I have a business, or I have an academic interest, or I have something that I think I would like to present at a conference, and maybe they've not done it before because of the cost has been prohibitive. What would somebody who's thinking about presenting or even exhibiting at the OcuSource Expo, what should they be doing right now?
If you have enough of an interest where you might be thinking about exhibiting, our suggestion is to participate and do a presentation, certainly. And if you don't feel comfortable exhibiting at this event, you know, certainly there will be events in the future, but come on board, do your presentation. You're not standing up in front of a crowd, you're sitting in front of your computer doing your presentation, so a lot of the stage fright might go away. But certainly go through, take a peek. There is a page under the exhibitors area in the left navigation that explains the relationship for exhibiting. There are also some very small advertising spaces available that certainly are visible to the visitors that come to the pages, so it's well worth the cost of what the investment in advertising could be. But even exhibiting, I was just at an event just a couple of months ago in London, and I think it was a total of over $3,000 for a 10-foot square booth at that event, which was amazing. And even some of the local events are $1,700 or $1,800, and then you have the expense of shipping, staff time, meals, hotels, all of that, airline fees associated. It adds up to be at least $5,000 to attend an event for one person in most situations. So our exhibit fees are very low. They're $3.95 for the nonprofit organization. So if the nonprofits want to promote the services that they provide, they're welcome to join us. If you're a for-profit entity, the fee is about $100 more at $495, which is really quite a bargain compared to what it costs to do a physical event. And again, you can can do it from home.
We'll wrap this up in a little while. I just wanted to ask you, is there anything that we hadn't talked about that either of you would like to mention?
Besides the events, each night we have an entertainment section. One night we're going to have, the first night we're going to have Jim Stovall, who was the originator of narrative television, and he's an incredible public speaker and a very, very, if anyone out there hasn't heard Jim speak, then this is the time. He's incredible. And Pat Boone has agreed to spend some time talking with some of the people that are going to be showing up. So there'll be an evening with Pat Boone, and he'll be in the presenter hall live doing that. Then one night we want to do blind entertainers. So if any of you blind singers, guitar players that want to have some fun and pop in that night, please contact us. And then the third night, or one night, we're doing a country night, and we're going to have several of the major country recording artists that a lot of people know their names. Leona Williams, possibly Merle Haggard. He hasn't confirmed yet, but he's been on before. We have several that have committed. Actually, I would like to ask the audience that's listening out there to get a hold of anyone that you think might be interested, your agencies, the people that you're working with, vendors, anyone, to help make this a success. It wouldn't be a success without your participation. So anyone that has any desire to help us with this project at all, feel free to stop over at OcuSource, and I'll be in one of the rooms quite a bit of the time, and or email or call, and we'll point you in the right direction if you want to do some volunteer time.
Excellent. Okay. Well, as always, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, George, and welcome to Main Menu to Lou. Let's finish with some contact information then, so people can find you and hunt you down and stalk you. No, let's hope not, but certainly get in touch with OcuSource and learn more about the expo coming up on the 8th of June this year. So let's start with you, George. How do people get a hold of you? If they don't know already.
Well, a lot of people have my audio tips address, but probably the best way is Buys, B-U-Y-S, at talkingcommunities.com. Also, if you go to talkingcommunities.com and click on just about any of the links, the contact links there, we have a toll-free number and a corporate number that people can give us a call also.
Okay. And Lou, how do people find you?
My best calling card is, of course, OcuSource.com. So it's www.OcuSource, that's with one C, OcuSource.com. And my email address is Loul, at OcuSource.com. The telephone is 888-299-6657.
I'm just going to telephone number one more time. I always get emails from people saying, oh, you never got them to repeat the telephone number. So if you give us that number one more time and maybe spell OcuSource. OcuSource was OcuSource.com, I think, and the telephone number?
And the telephone number is 888-299-6657. And my direct extension is extension 701.
Gentlemen, on behalf of Main Menu and our listeners, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Last week on Main Menu, we heard part one of Jerry Hallerton's demonstration of VoiceOver, a new screen reading product which comes as standard with the new Apple OS X 10.4 Tiger. And judging by the email from listeners, it went down a storm. We do appreciate that feedback. Do keep it coming. So, without any further ado, here's part two.
All right, so the default voice for VoiceOver is Fred. Apple has a number of voices that it ships with all Macintosh computers, and they are synthesized voices. There are a few sampled voices, although they're not very high quality, I would say. You can get voices from a company known as Kepstrel. They make very good voices, and you can use them with a VoiceOver. Now, the default voice, as we saw here, is Fred. I'm just going to move to the right.
35 rate edit text.
All right, so we can set the rate of the voice in this text field.
Rate 35 incrementer.
All right, so an incrementer, I guess just another word for slider. A sighted user could just visually grab this incrementer and move it around, or you could just type text directly into the edit fields.
50 pitch edit text. Pitch 50 incrementer. 100 volume edit text. Volume 100 incrementer. Content.
All right, so we've come to one of these additional voice options for VoiceOver. And here we can set different voices for different things, such as content voice, attribute voice, type voice. And I'll show you what I mean by that. We're just going to read across here.
Default voice. Content pop-up button.
All right, so here we have a pop-up button for the voice, which will speak content, okay? And right now, all of these choices are set to the default voice until we change them. So let's keep the content voice as Fred. So we could either leave this as default or choose Fred.
Menu on default voice, check mark.
Which is Fred, but I'm just going to say Fred for now.
Fred.
Okay, hit return.
Fred. Nothing is as powerful as an idea whose time has come.
A little sample of Fred, of course. Let's read down here.
Default voice, status, pop-up button.
So now here we can change what voice we would like to use to indicate the status of something, and that'll tell us whether something is selected or not. Let's say, for example, let's choose...
Menu, on, default voice, check mark.
Let's go down this.
Agnes.
Agnes, all right, let's...
Agnes.
Nothing is as powerful as an idea whose time has come.
All right, she's not the best sounding gal, but let's go down here.
Default voice, type pop-up button.
Type, all right, let's say...
Menu on default voice, check mark.
Let's choose, let's say, Bruce.
Agnes, Albert, bad news, Bob, Bells.
As you can see, some of these voices are kind of novelty voices, so you probably won't end up using many of these.
Boing. Bruce.
Bruce, all right.
Bruce.
Nothing is as powerful as an idea whose time has come.
All right, let's move down.
Default voice. Attributes.
Pop-up button.
All right, so now you're starting to see what's happening. The Fred voice was telling us that... This was the attributes voice. It was set to the default voice because we haven't changed it yet. And the Bruce voice told us that it was a pop-up button because that's what we chose for type. Let's get into this here.
Default voice, attributes,
pop-up button.
All right, let's change this to, let's say, Vicky.
Vicky.
All right.
Vicky.
Nothing is as powerful as an idea whose time has come.
All right, Vicky.
Default voice. VoiceOver menu, pop-up button.
All right, so whenever you get into the VoiceOver menu, you can have a specific voice for that menu alone. Let's...
Menu.
On default voice.
Check mark.
Let's choose, let's say Junior for that one.
Junior.
All right.
Junior.
Nothing is as powerful as an idea whose time has come.
Eh, I don't like that one.
Menu.
On Junior.
Check mark.
Let's choose Ralph.
Ralph. Ralph.
Nothing is as powerful as an idea whose time has come.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so now let's go to the top quickly by hitting Control-Option-Home.
To first visible item, verbosity,
tab 1 of 5.
All right, let's move across here.
Navigation,
tab 2 of 5.
Voices,
selected,
tab 3 of 5.
So as you can see, the different voices are giving us different feedback
regarding what type of control we're on, what its status is. So it's really quite helpful. Oh yeah, there was one other thing that I wanted to point out here. If you recall, we were able to navigate links in the help viewer by bringing up the links list. We can do something very similar in a dialog box such as this by bringing up the item chooser menu by typing control option I.
Building item menu.
VoiceOver
utility.
Is no longer busy.
All right, so now we have all of the controls in this window listed, and we can either use the arrow keys.
100, volume,
edit text.
All right, so I'm just going to interrupt that. Or we could use first letter navigation. I'm going to press A.
26 items.
Agnes, status.
Pop-up button.
Attributes.
Okay, so now we have a number of items here, but we can also narrow this search by typing more than one letter. So let's say I definitely wanted to get to that Agnes voice pop-up button. I could type AG.
One item.
Agnes, status,
pop-up button.
So it's narrowed down the search for me, and I could just hit return on this.
Agnes, status,
pop-up button.
And it takes me right there. Very cool. And you can do this, by the way, in any window, in any application. It's one of my favorite VoiceOver features. Okay, so let's just take a quick look at the last two tabs here. Let's get to the top.
To first visible item, verbosity,
tab 1 of 5.
Navigation,
tab 2 of
voices.
Select.
Display,
tab 4 of 5.
Display.
Press, display.
Selected.
Tab 4 of 5.
Let's tab into that.
Show VoiceOver cursor.
Checked.
Check box.
I'm going to read to the right here.
0% show VoiceOver cursor
slider.
Small. Large.
I guess you could change the cursor size here.
VoiceOver menu magnification.
And you could also magnify the VoiceOver menu itself for people with low vision.
38.5% VoiceOver menu magnification
slider.
Small. Large. Show caption panel.
Unchecked.
Check box.
There's also a caption panel that displays the text which VoiceOver speaks when it's over an item, which can help for dyslexic users.
21.4% caption panel font size. Show caption panel.
Slider.
Small. Large. Rows in caption panel. 11.1% rows in caption panel.
Slider.
1.10 caption panel transparency. 15.8% caption panel transparency
slider.
0% 100% help
button
reset
button
display
selected
tab 4 of 5
and move to the right.
Pronunciation
tab 5 of 5
press pronunciation
selected
tab 5 of 5.
Let's get into that
table.
All right, so we have a table here. Let me just interact with this.
Interact with table on row 1, text 802.11b, substitution 802.11b, application, any application 802.11b,
edit text.
All right, so here we have a table with dictionary entries, which are application-specific as well. Let me stop interacting with that.
Stop interacting with
table.
And
add button, delete button, help button, reset button.
All right, and that's it for this particular tab of the VoiceOver Utilities dialog. Okay, now let's quit out of the VoiceOver Utility for a moment. Command Q.
Finder, PTHD3.
Selected.
Let's take a quick look at system preferences, shall we? We can get there either by going to the Apple menu. We saw a menu choice there. Or we can visit system preferences right from the dock if we'd like. The Macintosh command for that is Control F3, or the VoiceOver command is Control Option D. Let's do that.
Dock Finder.
Running.
All right, so we can use left arrow, right arrow to navigate this.
Dashboard. Mail. Safari, iChat, address book, items, iCal, QuickTime Player, system preferences.
Here we go, let's hit return here.
Finder, PTHD3.
Selected.
System preferences,
window,
back,
dimmed,
button.
Okay, so we're at the toolbar at the top. We can just hit tab to get right into the system preferences content here.
Appearance button.
All right, this is a series of buttons. We can navigate this either with the tab key.
Dashboard and expose button. Desktop and screen saver button. Back button.
Or we could use first letter navigation. So I'm going to quickly get into the universal access pane of system preferences by typing U.
Universal access button.
All right, since this is a button, we're going to use the space bar.
Press universal access button.
Let's tab into here.
C.
Selected.
Tab 1 of 4.
So here we can set preferences for what we would like help with, in this particular case, seeing or hearing or pressing keys. We can use sticky keys, for example, if we have trouble with pressing modifier keys along with letter keys. So you can navigate this just as we did before, either by hitting tab or by using the voiceover cursor, control option, left, right arrow, up, down, etc. So you can visit and edit any one of the system preferences panes by either going to the top and going to the show all button, which would
to first visible item, back button, forward
dimmed
button, show all button.
So if I press this button, for example,
press show all button
and hit tab,
appearance button.
So we're back to where we were before, where buttons are populating this window. We could also access any of these panes by going to the menu bar.
Menu bar on Apple.
And we could go first letter navigation over to view.
View.
Down arrow.
View menu. Show all preferences. Command L.
Oh, we could have used a keyboard shortcut there. You learn something every day.
Organize by categories. Check mark. Organize alphabetically. Search. Command.mac. Accounts. Appearance. CDs and DVDs. Classic. Dashboard and expose. Date and time. Desktop and screen saver.
So as you can see, we can just arrow down this, or we can use first letter navigation. Let's say universal access.
Universal access.
And hit return.
Universal access.
So now we're back in System Preferences in the Universal Access pane. Let's quit out of this.
Quit System Preferences. Finder. PTHD3.
Selected.
And I just wanted to show you quickly how to navigate folders within your hard drive. So let's do Command-O to open this hard drive.
Open IPTHD3 window.
11 items.
Icon view. Scroll area.
All right, now we're in icon view in this particular case. I like to change that to column view, which seems to work pretty well. Shortcut for that is Command 3, and that's a Macintosh shortcut, not VoiceOver.
As column view browser.
All right, so now let's say we wanted to just get to the applications folder, for example. We could either use the up-down arrows, or we could use first letter navigation.
Applications.
Selected.
Folder.
All right, so since we're in column view, it's kind of like a tree view. We can either use the up and down arrow to go between folders in the first column, or we can use the left and right arrows to navigate very much like you'd expect. Let's move to the right here.
Address book.
Selected.
Application.
All right, let's go down here.
Apple script.
Selected.
Folder.
All right, so this is a folder. We can either move down or to the right and see the contents of that. And when we come across something that we're interested in opening or launching, we can press Command-O to open it. One thing I'd like to point out here, and this is a fundamental difference between Windows and Macintosh. Let me get to the desktop here.
Close all.
I use the Close All Windows command, which is Command-Option-W. In the Windows world, when we want to launch an application, a shortcut from the desktop, or open an item, we would normally hit Enter. Now, this yields a very different result in the Macintosh world. First of all, let me say that there is a difference between the Enter key on the numeric keypad and the Enter key, what Windows users call the Enter key on the QWERTY side. In the Macintosh world, the Enter key in the QWERTY section is known as the return key, and the return key and the enter key can have very different functions depending on the application. application. Now, in the Macintosh world, hitting return on the desktop or anywhere in the Finder on a highlighted item will create an edit box around the name of the item, and thus you can rename the selected item. For example, right now I think the PTHD is selected. Let's check.
PTHD 3.
Selected.
Okay, so it is selected. Now, if I were to hit return right now, you'll see what will happen.
PTHD 3.
Edit text.
Interacting with.
Edit text.
5 characters. Currently on line 1. Word PTHD 3. Character P.
So, of course, we heard a lot of information there. We can either just start typing right here because the text is selected, or we can use the left and right arrows. If I choose the left arrow, it'll put us right at the beginning.
P-T-H-D-3.
This is usually my Pro Tools hard drive, but I'm using it as a boot-up drive right now. Anyway, I'm going to hit return.
Desktop P-T-H-D-3.
Selected.
So I just wanted to point out that fundamental difference between Windows and Macintosh in terms of launching selected applications or files and typing names. Incidentally, speaking of typing, there is a difference between the way Windows screen readers handle insertion points and the way VoiceOver handles it. Let's quickly go over to TextEdit for a moment. Still running here.
TextEdit. TextEdit. Untitled.
Window.
Styles. Menu button.
All right, I'm just going to start typing here.
H-E-L-L-O space E-V-E-R-Y-D-O-D-Y-S-O-T-S-A-E-R, period.
All right, let's see what we wrote there.
Hello, everybody out there.
Out there. I guess I misspelled that, so let's move back here.
Period. R-E-H-T.
So I guess I forgot the E at the end of the word there. Now, you notice that the last letter we heard was T. I'm just going to repeat the current character here.
T.
All right, that's Control Option C. Now, when I move the insertion point to the right, we're going to hear the letter T again.
T.
And that's because the insertion point has passed over or through the letter T, if you will. Now, in the JAWS world, and I'm sure it's the same for Window Eyes, if we were to navigate the insertion point left or right, we would only hear the letter once. And with VoiceOver, you would actually hear the letter each time you pass through it. Same goes for words. So if we wanted to insert an E, what we'd actually do is move the insertion point to the right.
T-H-E. R.
Now, after we've heard R, the insertion point is now in front of the period. I'll just prove that.
Period.
I've just typed Control Option C, and that tells you what character is immediately to the right of the insertion point. But the last thing we heard was R, so I guess to me it makes sense. As you're moving to the right, you hear the character through which or over which the insertion point is passing. So I'm just going to type E here.
E.
All right, and to the right of that.
Period.
And I'll read the word, option left arrow.
There.
And we have the word there. So it's a little bit different, and it takes a little bit of getting used to, but I just wanted to point that out. Now, let's quit out of this.
Quit text edit. Interact with
dialogue
for untitled
window.
6 items.
Do you want to save changes to this document before closing?
All right, let's tab.
Cancel
button.
Save
button.
Don't save
button.
I don't need to save that. Let's hit.
Press don't save. Closing dialog. Finder. PTHD 3.
Selected.
All right, so there you have a very quick overview of some of the features in VoiceOver and how one can use VoiceOver to navigate Tiger OS 10.4. In the future, I'm sure that others will contribute segments for main menu demonstrating how to use VoiceOver with Mail, with Safari, the OS 10 web browser. And in the future, I also will demonstrate how to do an installation of the OS because the operating system installer is accessible. So that'll be for a future main menu. But for now, thanks for listening, and I'll see you soon. Bye.
That's it from the Main Menu team for another week. It's time for us to log off. Don't forget, of course, Main Menu is your program. We would love to hear your feedback and welcome your submissions. Do drop us a line, mainmenu@acbradio.org. I'm Dave Williams, and until next time, bye for now.